It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Of course, Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast on the weekends and also during our noontime hour. And we say good morning to our favorite food guy. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Good morning. Did you know that yesterday was National Ice Cream Day?
I most certainly
did. I forgot
all
about it until this morning.
I know I knew about it, but I that's one thing I
yeah, I thought you check on these things. You have a book or something that tells you what every day is.
Because there is something every day. But you know what? Ice cream, I used to love ice cream, and I don't love it so much anymore. I don't know why.
Well, I still love it, but it doesn't love me. So I did have an ice cream yesterday, not in celebration, but because I wanted one. But there's an ice cream scooping place in around Brooklyn called, by the way, Uncle Luigi. Not Uncle Luigi, but Uncle Luigi.
Luigi.
And Uncle Luigi has a no sugar added, a butter pecan, and no sugar added vanilla. So I had some no sugar added butter pecan. But the reason I'm even mentioning this is that I have, you know, now I can't remember where I got it, but I have recently been given a recipe for a faux ice cream that has no sugar. It's made with frozen bananas. The bulk of the ice cream is actually frozen banana. So when you get your banana, I mean, we eat a lot of bananas around here. I mean, no, we don't eat a lot, but Bob has a banana every day, and for me it's a big treat because it is the highest sugar fruit. So, but sometimes we end up with more bananas than we can eat. So when they're really, really ripe, I chunk them up, peel them, of course, chunk them up, and put them in a plastic bag and keep them in the freezer. And I used to make smoothies with this. But this is more like ice cream than a smoothie, although I don't have a proper machine to make this faux ice cream. So I've had to add a little milk to the mixture, which makes it less faux as ice cream. I mean, less fake, because it does have a dairy content. But if you have a really good food processor, which I don't, and my mini processor is not strong enough to really do this without added milk, so I tried doing it in my very old blender. If you have, you know, like a newfangled Vitamix or whatever they are, I don't know, these super blenders, it'll work just fine. You don't need a processor. In the end, when I say old, I was given, I'm sure I've mentioned this on the air because it's one of my most precious possessions. I was given this blender in, I figured it out yesterday, 1966.
And it still
and it
works.
It was already in 1966. On the occasion of my moving into my first apartment at college. It was given to me by my parents' best friends, Marie and Caesar, Benvenuto. And they were getting a new blender, which I think what was new about it is it had more speeds than this one, which only has two speeds.
Do you remember the first...
Pardon me?
Do you remember the first Oster blenders? After
that's
the...
what I have.
Okay.
That's what I have. An Oster blender, and I have gone through several, if not many, other blenders, and I always come back to this blender that was given to me in 1966, already old. So I mean, maybe they had it 10 years. So this, I don't know. The Oster blender, you think it came up in the 50s?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, it works, and here's the recipe. It just couldn't be easier, but it's surprising. For three. You know, large-ish bananas, although I used four small ones, and it was exactly the same. So be a judge. It's what you have. Chunked up and frozen. Put that in the blender or whatever machine you have with, a rounded tablespoon of peanut butter and tablespoon. I said a rounded tablespoon of peanut butter and a rounded tablespoon of cocoa, unsweetened cocoa, like you use for baking, not cocoa mix that has sugar and whatever added, just pure cocoa. And that's it. And you whirl it until it's ice cream if you don't use any milk. And if you use, I use in my blender, I have to add a half a cup, maybe two-thirds of a cup of milk to make the thing go. And then I would have to say it's a thick shake, but it's so thick you couldn't eat it with a spoon. Maybe it's about the consistency of soft serve. Although even when you don't use milk, it is about the consistency of soft serve. And that's it.
All right.
So have fun with it. You can of course play with this recipe, but I haven't yet got tired of it, so I haven't played with it yet. I was thinking that maybe instead of peanut butter, because the peanut butter, I'm sure, helps make it creamy. But I was thinking, since I always have this in the house, maybe if I added tahini, we could call it halva ice cream.
Hey, quick question. Do you remember ice milk?
Of course.
So what's
ice milk is like ice cream, but it's lower fat.
Right, because it was made with milk.
Yeah, you know, I don't look for it, so I don't know, but is it still around?
I have no idea.
Ice milk?
That's what I'm asking. I always remember there's ice cream if you were...
but my issue is not the fat.
I understand.
So I can have full fat ice cream, although probably shouldn't have too much.
But it's the sugar.
But it's the sugar for me. So this has no sugar added. You know, you just get the sugar from the bananas. Now, I made... the three bananas, tablespoon, when I was at my nephew's with the half a cup of milk. And it was enough for both of his little girls and me. So I would say it serves three, because little girls can eat, you know, enough ice cream, as much ice cream as an adult, I think.
And what about sorbet? You know, because...
I don't make any of these things, you know. I used to. You know, I have an ice cream machine, and it's really easy to do, but they all require sugar.
Right.
I mean, the fact is, sugar isn't just a sweetener. It also affects texture. So you make sorbet without sugar, it just ends up being granita. Now, granita, you can do. Granita is just frozen juice.
That's right.
Or frozen liquid.
Like those frozen...
It could be unsweetened coffee.
Uh-uh.
And, you know, or you could sweeten your coffee with, you know, most of the sugar substitutes cannot stand heat. They break down if you bake with them. But they can do cold. So you can sweeten your coffee with whatever sweetener you like. You could even add some milk or cream if you want. And that frozen and flaked, and I can tell you how to do this in a second, is granita. And then there's also the most famous, of course, is of lemon, granita, di limone. But any puree or juice. You can make apple juice, unsweetened apple juice granita. Although apple juice, even unsweetened, is basically sugar. So anyway, and to make granita, here's a cute story. Many years ago, my friend Iris, who spent her motherhood years in, she's still a mother, but he's an adult, her young motherhood years in Sicily, said, one day when it was really, really hot, she said, let's make... the lemon granita, the way we do it in Sicily. I said, and how is that? You put the lemon juice, sweetened, in a jar, and you put the jar in the freezer, and then about every hour, you go shake the jar. Now, if you put the jar in the freezer in the morning, by evening, you should have ice crystals. I said, well, you know, that's an awful lot of trouble, Iris. You know, every hour you got to go to the freezer and shake the jar. She said, well, there's not much to do in Sicily.
I bet she worries less when she was doing that, too.
So that's my frozen dessert story. Now, you know, it's been so hot. Who wants to cook? I guess we've been going out more than we should, but we go to simple places. But one of the things I decided to do the other night was... A few weeks ago, I talked about this Asian marinade that I'm hooked on, and it was a recipe in my mini food processor instruction book. I can recite it again. But fried rice was I'm on this fried rice kick. So the other night, though, I didn't want to turn the heat on the stove, you know, right before dinner for sure. So I earlier in the day, when it wasn't quite so hot, I boiled up some spaghetti, and I made a cold noodle dish with the same ingredients, more or less, that I would use to make fried rice. So it was cold noodles with peas, scallions, and I had in the refrigerator about a half-pound piece, maybe a little less, half-pound piece of pork tenderloin that I'd already roasted with the Asian marinade. And then I dressed the salad with more Asian marinade, and I thought I had added more scallions than Bob would tolerate. And the funny thing was, I said, well, what did you think? He said, could have had more scallions. So here's my proportions. I made 8 ounces of pasta. Next time I do this, truly, six for two people, 6 ounces of pasta is plenty. It's a lot of carbs, 4 ounces. And, of course, you have to understand that most American restaurant servings are 6 ounces. So half that is really a good portion. So 3 ounces, 6 ounces of pasta, boil it up. This is the one time where I rinse pasta, when I'm making a pasta salad. I have other techniques for keeping the pasta separate. You could just dress the hot pasta with a tablespoon of oil, and the pasta won't stick. But in this case, I decided to rinse it. I wasn't using my best pasta either, got to say. I think it was actually Barilla. I was trying to use up a box of Barilla. I'm banning Barilla from the house.
Since when?
it's good for baked pastas and for things like this because it holds up. It doesn't in this case, you know, it was going to sit with a dressing on it for hours in the refrigerator, and you don't want the pasta one of these real artisanal type pastas which soak up so much dressing that you have to redress it when you go to eat it. In this case, I added a tiny bit more dressing, but only a tiny bit. So when you get rinsed pasta, it's cool now. Put it in a bowl with it ended up to be 2 cups of diced pork. And next time I'm going to do this, I think I'm going to try it with shrimp. So whatever protein you want, and I would say 1.5 to 2 cups of small pieces of whatever protein you're adding. Could be roast. Could be leftover chicken. 1 cup of sliced scallions. Now, I slice them very on a strong diagonal, so they look nice in the salad. And I use the greens as well. And I would say a generous cup, even 1.5 cups of peas. And my new way of doing peas is I take my frozen peas and I blanch them for 2 minutes. Bring water to the boil first. And bring plenty of water to the boil so it doesn't stop boiling when you add the peas or entirely, or it doesn't, you know, it comes back pretty quick. Add your peas and count 2 minutes and then drain them. And you don't have to rinse them at all. As they cool, they'll cook just a tiny bit more. And then you add that to the salad. And that's it. Peas, scallions, and whatever protein you want. If you want to dice up more different things, you could. For instance, I thought I thought this needed a little crunch, so I added a rib of celery thinly sliced, also on the diagonal.
Do you ever use a soba noodle?
Soba noodles?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I this could have been made with Chinese noodles, but I don't have to keep those in the house. I can buy them fresh around here.
Right. No,
but,
I just...
But no, I don't cook with soba. For one thing, I think buckwheat is overrated. And also, if you look at the packages of soba, you'll find that some of them only have minimal amounts of buckwheat. So they don't really taste that buckwheaty. There are ones that I think are like 80% buckwheat. I think if you had 100% buckwheat, to make a noodle out of 100% buckwheat, which has, I think, very low gluten, to get it to all stick together and keep together requires enormous skill. But I do believe there used to be a place in Soho, I guess it was, that made their own soba. It was usually expensive because, it, as I say, requires a lot of skill to make fresh, really full buckwheat soba. But I think buckwheat, I love buckwheat because I'm Jewish and Eastern European, and so I eat kasha which is buckwheat groats, meaning big pieces of buckwheat.
Right.
But there's the flour made. I think it's, you know, as a health food, I think it's way overrated.
Yeah, I just like there was always there was a cold noodles and sesame recipe made with it. In fact, Japanese noodles that you used to only be able to get it. What was it called? Katagiri.
That still exists. That
okay.
Store's still there. And
right.
there's actually a better store downtown on, I think it's 9th Street off 2nd Avenue, where there's also a couple of Japanese restaurants which are good.
Right.
I'm not remembering the name. Mm-hmm. Han something or other. Is Hanka, something like that.
All right,
it's one of them. But upstairs from these restaurants is a wonderful, wonderful Japanese grocery.
Just the long short was, it's a really good recipe. I don't have it right now, but it wasn't gloppy for cold noodles and sesame. But the way that the noodles held it, I once tried, like, okay, I like this taste so much, I'm going to try it on regular pasta. And it did, like, it wasn't even close. And so that's...
Oh, well, you know, it is different. So I once remarked that I don't like whole wheat pasta, but I've certainly bought it in my life just to make sure I don't like it. But, in fact, when I went to use up a pound and I made something Asian with the whole wheat pasta, I thought, oh, well, out of the context of Italian, I like this. My problem is it doesn't taste Italian to me. So even though Italians these days love whole wheat pasta. So, I think the context is important. And now I realize I forgot an important thing. I dressed this noodle salad with the Asian marinade. But to the marinade, I added some peanut butter. One, to thicken it up a little bit, but two, to sort of maybe make it more reminiscent of cold noodles with sesame sauce, which is more sesame than this is. But this is pretty sesame. You know, that Asian marinade has a quarter of a cup of sesame oil in it, so it already has a good sesame edge. Should I repeat the ingredients in that Asian marinade?
Yeah, go ahead, if you don't mind.
Well, you know, if you go to the...
We go to the podcast.
You go to the podcast, it's there. But let me see, off the top of my head, I use about a 3-inch length, not real thick length, of ginger, peeled, chunk that up and put it in my mini processor. 2 or 3 cloves of garlic, depending on your love of garlic. It doesn't become overwhelmingly garlicky even with 3 cloves, but it also depends on the size of the cloves. Put that in the food processor and pulse that until they're both, the ginger and garlic, are finely chopped. And then to that, you add all the liquid ingredients, which is a half a cup of light soy sauce, 1/3 cup of neutral vegetable oil, could be canola, peanut oil, whatever neutral vegetable oil you use is fine in this, 1/4 cup of sesame oil, 1/4 cup of hoisin sauce, the juice of a lemon, no, forget that, forget the lemon, a quarter of a cup of rice vinegar. If you don't have rice vinegar, just use plain old white distilled vinegar. I wouldn't use wine vinegar necessarily, but if that's all you have, yeah, it's okay. And that's it. And and cayenne pepper to taste. These days I'm using a full 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. In the end, it's not so much because this is not being eaten just as what it is. It's always put on something. So, and that's it. And you just whirl that in the blender, and you've got this really wonderful Asian marinade that I use to marinate in baked chicken, pork tenderloin. I tried it on spare ribs, worked really well. But now I'm into a new thing, a new marinade, which I made, but I haven't gotten the product to put it on yet. I went the other day to check out a supermarket, a new supermarket, but I ended up not going to the new branch. It's called Net Cost, NETCOST. And since we're talking about Russia today, or avoiding the subject, when one or the other, this is a Russian supermarket. And they have five stores in Brooklyn. That's how Russian we are here. One in Rigo Park, which is another, I don't want to say Russian, this is former Soviet republics. Because here in Brooklyn, besides having Russians, we have Ukrainians, Kazakhstani, Azerbaijani, anyway, we have a lot of Soviet Republic, Georgia, we have a lot of Soviet Republic people here, and this store caters to them all. So there's there are five in Brooklyn, one in Rego Park, one on Staten Island, two in Philadelphia. I didn't realize Philadelphia had such a large former Soviet, I don't know what to call them, population, and then Manalapan, New Jersey. Net cost. So I was not impressed with the supermarket. The community that it serves loves good vegetables and fruit, and yes, they had good vegetables and fruit, but the prices were as high as they are in my fancy market here in Park Slope. What I did buy was sour cream. Of course, a lot of these cuisines use sour cream. I haven't tasted this yet, but for some reason it's called Canadian-style sour cream. So I didn't buy much, but on the way out, I picked up the flyer, the Net Cost Market, you know, weekly flyer, and on the back was a recipe for roasted lamb breast. Now, I eat this in the Uzbeki and Azerbaijani restaurants I go to, and I'm thinking that's what this recipe is, what's the spice mixture that they use to season the lamb breast. It sounds a lot like what I've been eating in the restaurants and can't put my finger on what it is. But so I made this spice mixture and to rub into the lamb breast, but now the problem is finding a lamb breast. In this community, lamb breast is a common item. I'm not sure what regular supermarkets, I never see that in a regular supermarket. I'm sure if I ask my butcher, they will have it. And I just learned that at Whole Foods here in Brooklyn, they're buying lamb from a farmer in New Jersey. So if they're buying whole animals, they definitely have a breast, and maybe they don't have any good way to sell it. I used to make 40 years ago, I used to make lamb breast all the time. It was not an unusual meat in the market in those days. It's extremely, extremely fatty. In fact, and so you have to cook it a long time to tenderize it and get rid of all that fat. I used to braise these ribs. They're really ribs. They're really lamb ribs. I used to braise them in beer. It was great. I have to see if I still have that recipe. I don't remember what I did exactly. But this, if I can't find lamb breast today, I'm going to go shopping for it. I hear Marshall says it's going to be better weather tomorrow, so I can turn the oven on.
Is it going to be better or Wednesday?
Wednesday. It's not breaking until Wednesday. Well, I'm going to be prepared, okay?
But let me know if you find lamb breast.
I'm thinking that it might be very good on lamb shoulder.
Right, but
so I go online because I wanted to be sure that, because I must say the photograph that they have in this Net Cost flyer does not look like the lamb breast that I know. It's way more meaty than the lamb breast I know. So I went online to see what exactly do they mean by lamb breast. And you're not going to, well, you'll believe this. I found the identical recipe down to the, you know, teaspoon online on allrecipes.com, which is a very, very popular recipe site. And I got to say, most of the time when I look at a recipe on All Recipes, I do close it. I think anybody can contribute to the All Recipes site. And this recipe,
how democratic.
Yeah, well, I know, but then you have to be discerning about which you're going to cook.
Completely. That's the problem in a nutshell. I have to just digress briefly. The BBC had a blah, blah, and I was looking at the blah, blah, and there was tasty chicken recipes. And I looked at three of these tasty chicken recipes, and then I backed out. You know,
so not so tasty.
Not so tasty.
Well, so this case, gross. However, I'm suspecting, I'm not making any real claim here, but I'm suspecting that Net Cost Market lifted this recipe from the All Recipes website. By the way, it's the only lamb breast recipe I could find, and it was identical to the one in this flyer. So here's the spice mixture, which if you find a lamb breast, I'm sure is going to be, I'll get to the baking this in a minute. But the spice mixture is really simple. It was only one spice I had to deal with that I, well, whatever. 2 teaspoons of salt, 2 teaspoons of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper, 1 teaspoon, they call it the dried Italian herb seasoning, something I never have, I wouldn't have. I read a jar of it in the supermarket, and I think it's largely oregano, so I just used oregano. I think, you know, if you buy Italian herb seasoning, it probably has some rosemary in it, too. But I just used a teaspoon of my wonderful Sicilian oregano, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1 teaspoon of ground coriander. Now, I always have coriander seeds because they last for a very, very long time, but ground coriander actually, the beautiful aroma dissipates quickly, so I ground it myself, no big deal. In a mini processor, if you use the grind thing, it doesn't come out fine powder, but it grinds it fine enough. But also, like, if I wanted to use a pepper mill, that works very well to grind coriander. Or if you have a spice grinder, even better. Then you can make it into a powder. But I figured since this is going on the surface, it's not so terrible if it's not a fine powder. And that's it. And then, you loosen this up, this mixture up, with a little bit of olive oil. I used 2 tablespoons of olive oil, as the recipe suggests. But if you go online, Chef John actually does a video of this very recipe with these exact measurements. And it's a very good, well-done video. You rub this mixture into both sides, well, really the top side, the meaty side of these ribs, and you use a little bit of it to rub on the bottom, too. Put them in a roasting pan and cover the pan with aluminum foil, and you bake. Now, this is how I do regular pork ribs. You bake in a preheated 300-degree oven. It could even be 275. 300-degree oven for, it's going to take at least 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours. But what you want in the end is extremely tender meat. When your meat becomes extremely tender, it will have also rendered a lot of the fat. So the bottom of your pan should be full of fat. Take the lamb out of the fat, put it on a foil-lined baking sheet. And you can do, by the way, you can make the preliminary cooking can be done the day ahead and then just refrigerate the meat. But refrigerate some of the fat at the bottom of the pan, too, because you're going to need that. Not all of it, but some of it. And when you're ready to cook it, put it, the lamb, basted with a little of the fat that rendered out, into a 450-degree oven, a really, really hot oven, and cook it like that, open to the heat, for about 20 minutes or so. He says 20 minutes. My experience with this, it could be 20 minutes or so, until the meat gets really nice and brown and the edges get crispy, but don't let it burn. There's no sugar in this, so it shouldn't burn. Now, you're going to, to make it even crispier and, you know, really give a nice, what do they call it in barbecue talk? There's a word for this. I'll think of it. To give it a nice crust, basically. Put it under the broiler, depending on how far away from the heat you are how good your broiler is. 3-4 minutes should be enough.
Totally goodbye. Talk to you next week.
I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Take care.
If we're still here.
We'll be here.
If we're still here, meetings today will make me very nervous.
We'll go eat. Arthur. You'll feel better.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, I just got to say this as in parting. If you go to Netcost, and it's an interesting store for the products, be aware that almost nobody speaks English, which is a big deal here in Brooklyn, that the Russian community, the Ukrainian community, do not learn English.
Da.
Goodbye.
Yet.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless catering and event planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, JARestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.